Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the, what is this? This is the leadership conference.
You sure?
It was initially for presidents and vice presidents of chapters and affiliates, but we opened it up to a larger community. I'm sure we'll have people join straggling in for the next 45 minutes or so. But I applaud everyone who got here on time.
Yay!
Incredibly true commitment to CCD. Anyway,
our first door prize is
two tickets to dinner at Rich and Thomas. And then one by Linda Correa.
And they got a new kitchen too.
Okay, so we're going to begin with introductions. We're going to go around the room.
I'll tap.
And Donna will do the tapping. I'm Linda Correll. I'm the president of the San Francisco chapter.
Jeff
Thompson. Who's that?
Jeff Ken Metz.
Could you say your affiliation for anybody who might not know?
Greater Long Beach and Greater Los Angeles chapters, both. LA is the home chapter.
You had to think on it.
No.
Robert Quinn, president, Greater Long Beach chapter, member, Greater LA chapter.
Mitch Pomerantz, president of American Council of the Blind.
And member of the San Gabriel Valley chapter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And of CCD.
I'm Mike Heathley from the Silicon Valley Council.
Winifred Downing, San Francisco chapter.
Bill Gillespie, Vice President of the Driven Empire Chapter.
Bill Brown, President of the Driven Empire Chapter.
Jackson
Chapter, President of San Diego Brown.
Andy Morocco, First Vice President of the Driven Empire Chapter.
Ramona Craig, East LA Secretary.
John Ryan, President of Blind Students, Treasurer of Driven Empire.
Walter Brown, President of the Empire Chapter.
Melody Bain, Active Blind.
Mary Beth Randall, President, Greater San Joaquin Valley Chapter.
Paul Cassio, Assistant Chapter.
Dan Heiser, President of Guido Youth of California, CCD Board Member and Chapter of Chapter.
Dan Kaiser, CCD Governmental Affairs and ACD Capital Chapter Member.
I'm Keith Johnson. I'm First Vice President of Glendale Burbank Area Chapter CCD. That chapter is my own chapter and my own chapter. I'll just say something else.
Step away for a second and speak at rally. I'm Donna Pomerantz, and I am Vice President of the San Gabriel Valley Chapter,
CCD. I'm Pamela Metz, President of Greater Los Angeles and Vice President of Greater Long Beach.
And Time Monster.
And I'm a Time Monster, so I'm going to be monitoring the time you guys speak.
Oh, Lord.
And I don't feel good, so
Pamela volunteered for this august responsibility,
yes, I
so
did.
We know she's good at it.
Because I know a few people in here can talk real long.
Donna is going to read the agenda of the program. I think it's time at this point to make the very sad announcement that the handouts that we so carefully and assiduously got ready to bring are sitting comfortably in a box in the Sacramento.
Because our wonderful, wonderful Ed Branch is dealing with, you know, being sick and all that good stuff, and he's all right. He just, you know, kind of couldn't think of every single million thing. So, but we'll be fine. What we're going to do is, folks have been typing in everyone's names that are here and what we're going to do with the list that we compile and the list that Linda and I got from you guys as well is mail the materials to you directly, the format that you requested. So, if you had requested for email, then you already got your format of preference. But some folks specifically asked for Braille or a cassette tape or whatever, and those will be in large print, and those will be mailed directly to the house if you requested them. So thank you for your patience on that one. And sounds like everybody's coughing and sneezing, so we're a fun bunch.
Madam
Donna. Yes. Yes.
I'm not only a migrant. I just want to say how thrilled that I am about everyone that has pitched in to make this event possible. I'm anxiously awaiting my handouts as well. So, I'm equally glad of all those of you that have shown up. I think that the impetus was from many of the leaders in this organization, and I think that the grassroots is really showing its muster here, and I think today's event is really going to be outstanding, especially I want to commend Linda and Donna for all their hard work and all of their presentations. Yeah. Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just very quickly, this is Ken. One comment might be taken a little negative, but it has to be said.
Yes.
People who have guide dogs, please learn to pick up after your dog.
Yes.
If you're not doing it because you're lazy, at least be unlazy to the convention. It is no fun walking into your dog's whatever. It's enough picking up after mine, and we really try to do it. There are occasions where it's easy to miss something, but what was out there already this morning, and there aren't even that many of us here with guide dogs yet, it's wrong. I'm sorry. Do something about it, or take somebody with you.
And the trash can is just to the closest to the building from the lawn. So it's
real close. It's very close.
To the right of the lawn.
He's already stepping out there,
too. Yeah.
Perhaps we should consider surveillance cameras.
That's a good idea.
Or even the threat of surveillance cameras.
And I have to say, it's usually me that steps in it or Mitch that steps in it. Yeah, but I like surveillance. There you go. And I also want to thank everybody that we had several calls putting all of this together, and Pam Metz was part of the committee, and Lee Morton was part of the committee, and Ann Kaiser was part of the committee, and John Ross was part of the committee, and who am I forgetting?
Lillian
was part of the committee, so it was great working with everybody, and I'm looking forward to how today is going to turn out. So I think we're going to have a great group, and I think people will be coming in and out periodically because not everybody's quite here, but this is...
She didn't request a specific...
Yeah, she didn't request a specific format, so... Okay, so on that note, I want to go ahead and read the agenda to folks, and 8 to 8:30 was, wandering in and BYOB, which stands for bring your own breakfast if you wanted to do so. I remember I told Linda specifically, please put in parentheses, bring your own breakfast, because when the history is written again years down, they'll say, wow, those people, BYOB to a leadership workshop. Woo! And they know how to do it.
Bring your own bed.
Bring your own bed. Bring your own breakfast. 8:30 to 8:45 was introductions. 8:45 to 9:30 is a wonderful group activity. It's a listening and reporting activity, which will be facilitated by our wonderful Linda Perrell. And we have 9:30 to 9:50 CCB history from some dinosaur I know named Mitch Pomerantz, I think it is. And around 9:50 to 10 o'clock, we're taking a break. And 10 to 11:15, we're doing the officer duties and responsibilities. And that'll be a panel that will be facilitated by our own Pam Metz, Time Monster. You know, she's liking that too much. Maybe we need to get somebody else. I don't know. It's a little scary. Oh, well, too late. Panel members, the president will be our own Wynn Downing, who will be talking about some of those duties and responsibilities of president. Vice president, some person by the name of Donna Pomerantz. She'll be doing vice president. Secretary will be Ann Kaiser. Treasurer will be our own Lee Morton. 11:15 to 11:35 will be a discussion on fundraising led by our own Ken Metz, alias Step in Poop. I think he raised the poop. Yes, step in poop. Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Was there a group in the 70s by that name?
Oh, there you go. Oh, okay, poor Ken. Sorry. 11:35 to 12:15 will be a presentation on advocacy by our own wonderful Dan Kaiser. Who? Some guy by the name of Dan Kaiser. He always wears these really cool tie-dye shirts that I saw once, and he's not wearing that this morning, so I couldn't find him. Oh, I'm sorry. That's how I find you. 12:15 to 12:30 will be our wrap-up, and that will be facilitated by Linda and myself. One of the things that I just wanted to say really quick is when you get your handouts, or for those of you who already have them in email, we put in an evaluation form, and we really, 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 really would love for you to fill it out. Be honest. We put in a number of we can have this done a number of ways, and folks can remain anonymous if you want. You can send them directly to Ed in the office, and when he gets them to Linda and myself, you know, we won't know who you are if you don't want us to. But, you know, we really want to hear from you, so please fill out those evals. And on that note, I'll give it back to Linda.
Thanks. This first exercise is one of those group exercises where everybody groans, as we all know, do we really have to do that? One person whom we all know well, Roger Peterson, decided not to come to this meeting because it smacked too much of personal growth. And he had enough personal growth.
And he said he was large enough, so.
Yeah, he's got a lot of growth.
That's what he said.
Exactly. So here's, it's personal growth time, kids. What we're going to do in this exercise is look at our listening and reporting skills. We're going to divide up into pairs, and I would really like it if folks wandered around and hooked up with somebody that they don't know that well. I know that people are sitting in groups of folks that know each other, but I'd like you to reach out to someone you don't know well and have a partner. I'll explain the whole exercise, and then we can do the reshuffling. What you, each of you will do, you'll have 2.5 minutes. Pamela,
are you ready?
2.5 minutes each in the partnership to answer one of two questions, which I will state in a moment. And at the end of that, each sharing, we'll come back to the entire group. And you will report on what you talked about and what your experience was as a listener and a reporter. So here are the two questions. What challenges has your chapter faced or have you faced as an officer of your chapter? And what did you do to resolve them, or what did you learn from them if they ended up not being adequately resolved? The second question is,
describe some of the strengths and weaknesses of your chapter. So if we could spend a couple of minutes shuffling about, finding people you don't know, you could easily just look behind you or ahead of you at the table and see who's there. And Yeah, just partner up, kids. And let me know when you're ready. Okay, everybody set with a partner yet?
Yeah.
Okay, listen up, gang. I'm going to repeat the instructions. Okay, the nature of this exercise is listening to one another and reporting to the assembled group afterwards. So it's not, you're not reporting to each other. You're telling each other a story, but in the afterwards, we will call on as many pairs as want to present to the group about what they the information they exchange. But anyway, so the questions again are, pick a challenge that you faced as an officer of your chapter and talk about how you resolved it, or if it wasn't resolved, you know, what's left undone. The second question is, describe some of the strengths and weaknesses of your chapter. And the goal of this is about listening carefully to what the other person says, and about reporting your findings to the group, and about us all learning about the diversity of chapter experience that we have in CCB. So if you're all ready, Pamela will start. You should each pick who goes first, who goes second. And Pamela's going to start the time.
You guys ready?
Each speaker has 2.5 minutes, and then we'll get back together.
2.5 minutes apiece. Let's go. Yes, go ahead now. Okay, time's up.
All right, everybody. Now we're going to see how much personal growth actually occurs. So what we're looking... What we're looking for now is the first set of volunteers. Donna will bring the mic closer to you, or as close as we can, or move you to the mic, and to share your experiences. You can talk about what you actually discussed, and talk about how it was going through the exercise each in turn.
Richard,
please. Now, is that Richard and Foster?
And when we figure we go first to get over with,
Now, how long do we have to dispense this information? Okay. Since you had 2 minutes and 15 seconds to figure get it, you got 2 minutes to talk about it.
Yeah, each pair.
Each of you have 2 minutes to
talk
about it.
Have 2 minutes? Each have 1 minute.
Okay,
2 minutes per pair.
Okay. Yeah. So this is Foster Brown, right?
Yeah.
For the Inland Empire chapter. And he talked about a challenge his chapter faces as well as the strengths and weaknesses. The challenge that his chapter faced includes, in vague terms, they had an issue with a member last year who took money from two chapters to come to the convention, and they ended up coming out ahead. It was just a communication issue between his chapter and another chapter because they knew tried to send members to convention, and the member was a delegate of another chapter, so eventually they resolved the issue, but it was just a challenge that the chapter faced in terms of you know, honesty and trustworthiness with certain members. The weakness of his, what he said about his chapter was that membership has declined and members have driven down. However, those members who do attend the chapter meetings are strong, are supportive, they're very helpful, and get the job done.
Thank you.
Good.
Great. Perfect.
Good.
Yeah.
90 seconds.
Great standard.
Okay. And this was talking to Richard Reddick from the San Francisco chapter. And one of the weaknesses that he was saying in the chapter was that the chapter is very large, so during their meetings, sometimes people talk out of turn. Sometimes ideas don't get heard. But yet they still jump in on the positive side. They still do manage to get things accomplished. And when it comes to fundraising, the people really pull together and work to make sure the fundraising goes off.
Good.
Thank you. Next pair, good job.
You said, what did you learn from this exercise?
Right.
I learned from this exercise that I'm not the only one having a problem.
That's good.
You are not alone.
No. All right, who's next? I got a hand over here. Who's going to be the spokesperson?
I talked with Lorna Craig with PCLA, and he answered question number one. Chapter is older, is around quite a while. The members are all comfortable with each other and work well together. One of the drawbacks is they have some younger people who are not going to help. But overall, it's just like a pretty good chapter has been around for over 30 plus years, and it's like doing well. And what I learned from her and her talk was, that to keep a blend of older and younger, and try to keep it in mind.
Hi, my name is Ramona Dragon, and I'm from UCLA chapter. I'm from the Town Boston and Greater Bakersfield chapter. This chapter is very up and coming and progressive. We mentioned various, this is the second annual White Cane Day. We had a walk-a-thon. So they invited many representatives and legislative people. They had brochures out there. And they had the blind in the dark, nine in the dark, and eight iPhones. That was an experience for the members of the media and the legislative that just came from an official thing they can bring. The chapter is very entertaining and very informative. The community and just tries to keep it that way. They say that it's sometimes tough, but we're all going through the same process and we're all going through the same problems. And what I have learned is I met John Watt. And I've known him, I've seen him high and by, but to be surprised when people who see high and by don't really know. But I have had a big thing and very welcome time with John.
Hi. Yeah, there we go. Uh-oh. This microphone you have to sort of eat. Okay. I was meeting here with Sean, who is the president of Blind Students of California. He sort of undertook this, I think, under a lot of pressure, but he undertook the office, and he's beginning to try and increase membership. Currently, there are 14 members statewide. That makes it very difficult when it's a statewide. You don't have as much local control in regards to getting your people to meet and talk to one another and motivate each other. So what he's doing is he's setting up satellite groups, either affiliations or satellite committees, of Blind Students of California. And what they really want to do is get a small group and have each small group have a representative or more, who can go out to the various colleges and universities in their areas where blind students hopefully exist, And they want to be able to get that information, get those students interested in what Flying Students of California and what CCB can do for them as students and, of course, for their futures. They're working a lot on the transition between those students going from high school to either the college university system or even into the community college system. One of the difficulties is even though they get to try and learn who all the disabled student services groups are, a lot of the information there is confidential. They can't give out names, which is understanding because of the privacy issues. And so they're trying to get to the campus and actually find, under the hook, they're trying to actually find the blind students.
He can ignore her, but maybe he can't ignore me. No, but he's ignoring you.
10 seconds.
And they're trying to get
the blind students from each of these colleges so that they can reach the blind students of California.
Okay.
Damn, it didn't work any better here than it does at home.
Exactly. No.
Okay, thank you, Jim. My name is Sean, President of Blind Students. I think it was some of Kim's times. I had two chapters before on, but I think it was canceled all the time for me.
No. He's no special treatment just because he's my husband. No.
I have most of the space can report on membership issues as far as active and non-active members that show up for the rules.
Yeah. What did he say?
So, and another issue.
Thank you.
Okay.
What we can learn though is I feel like a lot of us are in the same boat as far as our active status is. The big problem that we're all facing is
getting everybody to work and to participate.
Thank you.
This is Dan Kaiser. I was chapter president for three terms in the early 90s, and I had the privilege of talking with Keith Christian. Shots at
Wow.
Listening skills, Dan. Listening skills.
Exactly. Where'd he get that?
Minus so far, okay. he's vice president of the Glendale Burbank chapter. That's on two cuts of coffee. And he said his biggest challenge in his chapter is that there's too many folks that are over 50.
I'm not over 50, so I can't say nothing.
You got to get younger people in this chapter because, maybe not everybody will. So we got to get younger folks in the chapter and older folks. And so he said what they're trying to do is go to community colleges to recruit students that way, and I thought that was a really innovative way of doing it. So they're still working on it, and they don't really, it's too early to, pick out any results, whether what happened with the community college. He said his biggest challenges in his chapter is only a few people do all the work. And boy, does that sound familiar.
Yes.
Here's the partner over here, Mr. Johnson.
They're doing okay with time.
I talked about my challenge, personal challenge as an officer of the chapter, not the particular chapter I'm like president of. I used to be president of one chapter at one time, and my biggest challenge was that at first I never was an officer in anything, and I spent 6 years as president, and I met the challenge, but then we got into some political issues about the state and national level, which really threw a monkey wrench in my persuaded because I was just meeting the challenge of being an officer to get this political issue. And
he's
that
coming. I got Keith, you got about 30 seconds left, honey.
A lot of our members were old mine.
30 seconds.
NFB members. And so, I mean, it was really a challenge to get through all that. So.
Okay. What about Dan?
Well, he was supposed to talk about me, but
his listening skills.
We all know about you, Dan.
Well, when I was chapter president, my biggest challenge was, this was in the early 90s, and we had three political factions that were, I thought were really causing a lot of trouble, and I went to the CCD president, and I said, you know, I really think the only resolution is to resolve and dissolve the chapter. And I think what the solution was with that was the president showed great leadership. He said, don't do that. Let's work on it. Let's work on your membership. So we increased a lot of the membership, and it's a good thing we did not dissolve the ACB Capital Chapter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All righty.
I have to preface something really quickly first. I got thinking about my chapter and not about GDC, so what Mike's going to report is not going to be about GDC, unfortunately. Not enough copy. Anyway, yeah. I talked to Mike Keithley, who's president of the Silicon Valley chapter. Huge chapter. He's the main challenges that he's finding with that chapter is, despite the fact that it's really huge, over 80 members, only 15 to 20% of the membership is actually actively involved with going to meetings, outside activities, really anything. And over the years, they've had some problems with a few individuals kind of intimidating, in the intention of getting people to be more involved. And be more active in the chapter, they've been intimidated by some of these individuals to where they're even backed off more than they would have.
That happens.
So that's
that
a
happens.
Problem they have. And I guess it's just the issue is to try to get some of these people to feel that they can be comfortable with who they are and what they do and can stand on their feet, on their own feet, and be an active part of the Silicon Valley chapter and have something to offer to the chapter. So I think that's was about it.
Hi, I'm Mike Heathley. I talked to Ann. She comes up on the Capitol chapter. She was saying similar things. It's a diversified chapter. It's a diverse chapter with many ethnic groups represented, and there are a lot of activities in the chapter, and especially since they have to host the conventions in Sacramento, the various things there, hospitality room and such. But there are not that many people involved in the activities of the chapter, and there are people who are involved, are doing all the work, and have tended to do that from year to year. Thank you.
Okay, I spoke with Melody over here, and she's a member of the Active Blind of the Moon Valley. And she talked about some of the challenges in their chapter, and two of the main challenges that she talked about were membership. They had tried to use the Veterans Center as a good place for having their meetings and hoping that they would get a number of members that way, and it didn't really turn out that way for them. And so it's been kind of disappointing for them. And as a part of that same challenge, their treasury is not in that great of shape. And that's partly because they don't have members and they're not able to get enough people to help with different things that way. And so those have been some of the biggest challenges, and she's, and it seems like she's enjoyed being in the capital.
Melody. I was talking to Mary Beth, she's from the Greater Joaquin chapter, and she's the president. And one of her challenges of being the president is having people take on jobs or duties. And the idea of assigning people, there's a lot of people who attend, but nobody wants to do anything. That's been her challenge as the president. And as far as the things that's going on in the chapter is that they're trying to get the word out about the chapter in order to build their membership and to build their treasury, because, you know, that's one of the main issues. So they're doing a fundraiser for in the community, it's called Shoes for Kids. And the way that they're getting the word out in the community is by flyers to different businesses and asking them to participate. So
hopefully that works.
It's a good idea for us. Okay.
Is this working?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I apologize. I was talking to Andy. He's the president of the
Vice president. Right here. Thank you.
Well, watch it. I already did it. Of the Greater Los Angeles area. And he was telling me some of his strengths
weaknesses.
It's basically about the same as our chapter seems like. We're having a real problem right now with
location.
Place for their meetings.
I'm so lucky.
Attendance. One thing I did learn is, you know, I'm glad to see that it seems like everybody's kind of in the same boat with a lot of this stuff. So I don't feel so bad that I'm having to go through all these problems in my own chapter. What I learned was just really nice to talk to Andy and see another chapter.
Hey, yes, I spoke with Paul Patch. He was the president of the, he said he was the president of the ACB Capital Chapter, and I thought maybe that was in Washington, D.C.
Right, so do I.
But basically, it was kind of the same thing. He said that they were having a problem finding a suitable meeting place that would meet everybody's expectations in terms of location and in terms of the, you know, do they want to eat and you know, what do they want to eat? Do they want to eat breakfast? Do they want to eat lunch? You know, what time of the day do they want to meet? Things like that. And one thing I noticed from listening to a lot of this before the mic got to me is that it seems like we're all kind of in the same boat, you know, because basically he and I were saying the same thing, you know, our chapter, what I said basically to him is that our strength is our weakness, also that we cover such a large area.
Yeah.
That we have people who come as far as 30 miles to a meeting. And, you know, we lost our meeting place, and the way I found out about it was a friend of mine told me that he read it in the L.A. Times.
That's how I found out about it.
So we've been scratching in that regard, and it's like, well, you know, where do we meet? Because if you go too far south, you only meet the people in the north. If you go too far north, you only meet the people that are in the south, you know, and, you know, do you want to eat Chinese food, or do you want to eat Mexican food, or whatever, so... It seems like, you know, we're all facing the same problems, mm-hmm. and that's what makes this meeting so interesting and so valuable.
One thing I want to say real quick on the ACB portion. 2 years ago, they wanted to change the name, and if I had realized what was really going on, I would have voted the other way. It is very hard to start a meeting going, this is the ABC Capital Chapter. Mm-hmm. I think it should be CCB Capital Chapter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why not? We're a bunch of offices.
Maybe.
Steve is the president of Bayview Chapter, and he told me that his challenge was to get people to follow through when you give them an assignment.
This will be the last one.
Sometimes, you know, he gives them an assignment and they don't follow through.
Can you give a signal to Donna?
So yeah. What he has to do is delegate people responsibility to those who will do it, and it's always the same people. And the weakness is for, and also his strength, though, is his chapter knows about CCB and where it wants to go and how he, what chapter, the chapter is very willing to fight for what we believe in. And the weakness is he calls it remote control politics, where people on the sidelines want to do all these things, but then they won't do anything. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Love it. That's a good one.
Good morning. This is Steve Ford, Bayview Chapter President, and I was speaking with Marlene O'Neill, who has been president of BRLC for the last year, and also the previous president of BRLC resigned very suddenly and without notice, and without any prior notice to any of the other members, and she was left. Well, she was drafted, and she was left to try to put the state and affiliate back together again, which is a real challenge. And the strength of the chapter, or the affiliate, is that there were people who were experienced and could help her and try to guide her along the way, knowing that she was committed to follow through with the assignment she's been given. And the weakness is that sometimes you don't know who can or will follow through with a particular assignment or with putting together a certain activity. And thank you for listening. I love that.
With apologies to anyone who didn't get to present, we're going to sort of wrap up this activity and then move on to the next one. It's been incredibly interesting to listen to all of this. I feel that, you know, it's so clear that that statewide all of us are facing similar challenges, even though the particulars may differ to some degree. We are all in the same boat. Many of us are getting on, with apologies to Sean and Richard and Pam and a few people who aren't getting on as fast as the rest of us are. And so then we have quite a range of membership challenges. Getting members, having too large and rangy a chapter, too opinionated a chapter, getting people to delegate responsibility, all of those things face us all in varying degrees. But I hope that this exercise created a spirit of unity among us, and that we really are all facing the same challenges. And it's interesting to see how each individual chapter chooses to tackle them and resolve them. So thank you all very much, and my apologies to those who didn't get to present.
Food.
Yeah, there's a lot about food. Well, San Francisco has an answer to the food thing. First we meet, and then we go out to eat. But
what's next?
Okay, next on our agenda will be Mr. Mitch Pomerantz. We'll talk a little bit about the history of CC.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a good thing that I know how to read notes without a podium because I don't got one. This morning we ran into Warren Toyama in the lobby, and I said to Warren that I've now gotten to the stage where I'm talking about the CCB history. And I don't know what that exactly means, but except that I've been around a while. A lot of you out there have lived much of this history, at least as long as I have. So for a lot of folks, this is going to be old news. But there are some observations that I want to make along the way, at least as long as my voice holds out. There has always been a tension between the sighted folks who ran the agencies to the blind and for a long time the organizations for that matter. There's always been a tension between the sighted who think they know what's best for us as opposed to the blind and visually impaired ourselves. And that's really at the root of how the California Council of the Blind began. It was founded in 1934, as most of you know. What many of you may not know is that the meeting that was called in Fresno to establish the organization was originally set up by a sighted social worker who had, I think, delusions of grandeur. The problem is that she was outflanked. Most of you have heard of Newell Perry. Mm-hmm. Newell was, of course, an instructor at the California School for the Blind, and Newell did a lot of organizing. He did a lot of traveling around the state, and at the time, there were what were called adult blind clubs. In this day and age, that would have a totally different meaning. But I think there are still a couple of chapters with Adult Blind Club. Yeah, Solano. So this meeting was called, and the lady thought she was going to be their first president. All of a sudden, much to her chagrin and shock, Newell Perry was elected the first president. And instead of it being the California Council for the Blind, it became the California Council of the Blind. In 1940, of course, CCB was one of seven state affiliates which sent delegates to a meeting in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. The result of that was the establishment of the National Federation of the Blind, which was, in fact, the first nationwide consumer advocacy organization of blind and visually impaired persons. The CCB, of course, was actively involved throughout the 40s and 50s in the Federation. Newell Perry and many others participated on the national level. Ultimately, of course, the president, the first president of NFB, was Jacobus Tenbrook. And he was from California. He was a law professor at the University of California, Berkeley. Apparently a very brilliant man, but ultimately turned out to be, I suppose the nicest term we can use is dictator. It was his way or the highway. Throughout the 40s and 50s, though, CCB within the state of California worked to improve the lives of visually impaired persons. We were involved, I think actually going back to the late 30s, early 40s, in the first Aid to the Blind legislation that was passed here in California. The Business Enterprise Program, which was a spin-off of the federal Randolph-Shepard Program, those programs and many others were initiatives, significant initiatives, which CCD championed during this period. If you think about Perry's boys, as they were called, Mule Perry, you had Jacobus Tenbrook, you had Perry Sundquist, you had Robert Campbell, you had George Fogarty. And yes, there were women who were involved as well. Juliet Esterly, Catherine Skivers, Dorothy Glass. So going back even to that era, the movement to improve our lives was fostered and promoted by both men and women who were blind. Beginning in the 1950s, however, philosophical and strategic differences among the CCB and NFB leadership began to negatively impact both organizations. Now, I am making two presentations this weekend, I guess. I'm making our ACD President's Report tomorrow evening, but on Saturday night, I'm making the banquet presentation. And I'm going to spend probably the first half of that speech talking in detail about the Civil War. And I'm doing that because I believe that the only way we can truly understand why the American Council of the Blind and the California Council of the Blind are the organizations that we are is to understand how we got to where we were, to where we are, why the ACB was founded in 1961. So I'm not going to talk much about the split now. Suffice to say that a growing number of Californians objected to what they perceived as the tyrannical rule of NFB's president, Jacobus Tenbrook, and his chief lieutenant, one Kenneth Jernigan. And there will be more on that Saturday. I can also tell you, though, from folks that I have spoken to who were there, that it was very, very ugly, very nasty. And friendships of 40 years were severed as a result of the Civil War. And the fact that many people who left the NFB cut ties with the individuals who did not leave the NFB. So in 1961, July 1961 to be specific, a group of dissidents broke away from the Federation and founded the American Council of the Blind. And this included a number of Californians who in fact had left the Federation 2 years prior, in 1959, and had their own non-affiliated organization. Among them were leaders such as Newell Perry, although by then Newell Perry was quite up there in years. He wasn't quite 110, Dan, but he was getting close. George Fogarty, who I was telling Donna last night, I think, was the first ACB, or at that time Associated Blind of California, person I ever met. A wonderful, wonderful man if you never had the chance to meet him. Robert Campbell, Catherine Skivers, Juliet Esterly, all of those folks were instrumental in establishing the California ACB affiliate, which at that time was known as the Associated Blind of California. Julie Esterly was ABC's first president, and the second president was Kathy Skivers. So, again, going back to a point I made a few minutes ago, this organization has always recognized that what was important in leadership was one's ability, not one's gender. CCB, the existing NFB affiliate, remained a part of the Federation until 1978. I joined in 1972, and several others of you here go back to that point in our history as well. Interestingly, and Kathy Skivers has always gone to great pains to remind me of this, even after the split, CCB and ABC always worked very closely together on the state level. And probably much to the dismay and displeasure of the NFB leadership, which at the time, of course, was based in Des Moines, Iowa, and then right around the time the CCB affiliate was kicked out of the NFB, of course, they left one step ahead of a grand jury to Baltimore. Now, that indictment was a very near thing. Might have changed everybody's blind history. But we always worked very closely together, and both organizations were instrumental in the late 60s in passing what we call the Model White Cane Law. That is Section 54 of the California Civil Code. And that gave blind people full access to travel the public sidewalks and access public accommodations without discrimination. And it seems in this day and age hard to believe, but at one time, not all that long ago, if you as a blind person were traveling down a sidewalk minding your own business, any good Samaritan could come up to you and tell you you have no right to be on this sidewalk, go home. And the authorities did that. The Model White Cane Law, and if we weren't the first state to pass it, we were very close. And of course, that law over the last almost 40 years, now that I think about it, I think I should tell Jeff, we perhaps ought to celebrate that. But that law ultimately served as the opening door for every other disability in California to gain equal access. That law has been amended more times than I can tell you, expanding the rights first of blind and visually impaired persons and ultimately of all individuals with disabilities in California. I think probably for that time, that was our first real significant achievement. In the early 1970s, though, there was another singular achievement. By this time, of course, the CCB affiliate had changed the name to NFB of California, and I can assure you it was not done happily. Our president at that time was a gentleman named Tony Menino. He was the godfather before the godfather came out. And if you get me at the bar later on tonight, I'll tell you some Tony stories, because I got a bunch of them. But he was an incredible man. He was just such a dynamic, energetic voice for blind people. So the old NFBC affiliate was involved in establishing an important position within the Department of Rehabilitation, the Program Manager of Services for the Blind. And I think that was in about 1973 or 74. I think it was 74. And that was the first person dedicated within the Department of Rehabilitation to making sure that services to our folks were handled appropriately. And there was a long battle, because at that time, what we really wanted, you've heard this one before, was a commission for the blind. And the compromise that was worked out, and it wasn't an easy compromise to work out, established the program manager position. And of course, the first person who filled that position was Manuel Urena, who just retired only, what, maybe 5-6 years ago. Additionally, the organization sponsored successful legislation giving blind people the right to serve on juries at that time. And I was involved in that, because I was one of those folks in the mid-70s who got turned down for jury service. They didn't even let me get into the courtroom. Ken, you'll remember one of the other plaintiffs, one Bertram Butch Hayner. Between Ken and Bert and I, we got one bus driver sent to Atascadero, I think, or Camarillo. We basically took over the bus. Butch and I, and I don't remember who the third plaintiff was, we sued the County of Los Angeles. And at that same time, NFDC had introduced the bill to at least allow us to get our foot in the door in the courtroom. And the legislation basically said that blindness in and of itself would not be a disqualifying factor for jury service. Now, every time I mention that to Donna, she curses me for that. I did it, yeah. Well, I'll take some of the blame, but I'm damn proud of that. Now, in 1978, the NFBC was expelled from the Federation, and we remained an independent organization until joining the American Council of the Blind in 1983. Those of us who lived through that, I mean, everybody knows my past. I've been through a couple of divorces.
You don't need to talk about that.
4 minutes. You have four. I'm going to save you. You have 4 minutes.
But I'm telling you that getting kicked out of the organization, and I can say it in hindsight now, was the best thing that ever happened to us. But at the time, it was more traumatic than a divorce. I lost friends. Most of us who were there lost friends. I won't tell that story because she's taking on my role, Ara, telling me I have to go. But at the time, two California ACB affiliates merged to form what is now the California Council of the Blind. CCB was and remains the largest ACB affiliate. We have, I think, over 1,200 members. And over the last 20 years, CCB has been the strongest voice advocating on behalf of blind and visually impaired people in this state, certainly. We far surpass the other organization from whence we came. Perhaps, though, CCB's greatest accomplishment, certainly in the last 15 to 20 years, was passage of SB 105 in 2002. And of course, that established a separate division for blind and visually impaired people in the State Department of Rehabilitation. Again, however, I will point out that it happened because we did work collaboratively with the other organization. And I don't believe that that would have happened any other way. This achievement was a statewide coalition, and Dan, you'll remember the Blind Alliance for Rehabilitation Change. And I think I came up with that at lunch, and I hadn't even had a beer yet. But that coalition included just about every agency and organization for the blind in California. So let me just conclude by telling everybody that, again, we'll talk about some of the national history Saturday night. But I really do believe that unless we understand our history, we cannot fully understand and appreciate the California Council of the Blind and the American Council of the Blind. Thanks very much.
I don't have time. Very good.
Madam Chair?
Yes?
Can I ask Mitch a real quick question?
Yes, you can.
Mitch, are you going to incorporate the constitutional amendment into your presentation Saturday night? Or?
Which constitutional amendment?
The constitutional amendment that CCB pushed that got the... you couldn't... that got blind dates.
Well, no, not because Saturday night we're going to be talking about what happened nationally, Dan. So, okay, no, I mean, we did mention, and I'd forgotten that, in fact, the aid to the blind came through a constitutional amendment here in California.
That was an incredible thing. I mean, you think about now what it would be in pay to do a constitutional amendment nowadays, and the OLCCB did that amendment because at that time you could not give money away. There was no such thing as welfare at that time. You couldn't give money away to citizens. And so this is a radical concept, and it was really an uphill battle, but CCB is the one that got that amendment through, that what we know as modern welfare today.
And now, of course, the California legislature gives money away to everybody, including themselves. Yeah. All right, folks, thanks very much.
Thanks, Mitch. Yes?
Very quickly, but I think on a sort of a fun note, we'll see if it's appropriate enough, I'll say it anyway. If you go into www.nfbc.org, that is not the NFBC, theirs is nfbcal.org. If you do nfbc.org, it's New Fun Black Chicks.
Oh! No! A little heavy-duty research there. All right.
He did some research.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to get started with the president's and vice president and secretary and treasurer's information. And the first speaker will be Winifred, okay? And she's going to be talking about the office of president. And after Winifred will be Donna, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Donna.
Okay, before you begin your term as president, whether you have been elected a number of times or this is your first time, there are quite a few things that you can think about and do, as many of them as you want to do. And I have not listed them in order of importance, but just in the order of getting things done. The hard thing is to find individuals or to assign committees to get things finished that have to be done before the meetings occur. And you can either do that, if you're a small chapter, by assigning a single person, or if you're a large chapter, by assigning a committee. And as Donna will say in her remarks later, you can also do this with the cooperation of other officers, the vice president or other officers, or you can sort of do it on your own. You can also do it by saying, who wants to do this job? The only trouble with that is sometimes you get somebody who says, I'll do this job, and you don't think they're going to do a very good job, and then there's nothing you can do to get rid of the person. So one of the first things is telephone chairman. And I think a telephone chairman is something extremely important. Sometimes we get people who say, oh, I'll do that because it's one of the things you don't have to leave home to do and you don't have to spend an awful lot of money, a few toll calls, but not so many. But they wouldn't really be the right person if you let that person volunteer. You need somebody who really has the gift of gab, you know, who wants to talk to the person that they call. Not just tell them about the meeting, but say, what have you doing, what you've been doing lately, and refer to something they told you in a previous conversation or that you knew about them, something that suggests to you their value as an individual. This is especially important if you're calling people who have not generally come to meetings and who you are encouraging to do so, because I think everybody likes to feel that we have value to another person in the organization that we belong to. In our chapter, we have two telephone chairs. We divide the address list A to M and then N to Z. So it is important to have a really good address list, and that's a hard thing because everybody moves around so much. It seems like the minute we get address list settled, somebody's already moved to someplace else before we put the list out. And all I do is I attach a sheet to the list that says extras, and I put the extras on as I hear about them. because you sort of can't redo the list all the time. It costs too much money and it costs too much work. When you do the address list, I think it's important to put the telephone number first. We usually aren't writing to each other's homes. So if we want to aid the telephone chair, get the telephone number up there at the top of that person's identification. Some chapters have newsletters. The acme of chapters with newsletters is the newsletter put out by the Silicon Valley. It's absolutely wonderful and has been for as long as I can remember. But Silicon Valley has some advantages that the rest of us don't have. They have a lot of bright people. That helps. We have lots of bright people. We have bright people, too. But they also have people with braille embossers and the ability to produce large print and some people who can edit and the kinds of things that are necessary to get a newsletter out. Most of our chapters don't have availability to braille and large print. So a newsletter for many of us wouldn't be, for many chapters, wouldn't be that valuable. We've never done it in our chapter, and I just think it's not so great for others. Incidentally, I haven't asked how much time I have.
You're fine.
Okay. No, but how much time do
you have? You have 15 minutes.
So I've used four. Okay. Okay. The next thing you have to consider is transportation. And I was just talking to Bill Gillespie, and he said in his chapter that's the principal problem that they have. They have no way of getting people to meetings that really works out. Even though they have paratransit and they have some buses, people sort of don't latch onto these things to get there. And when he talks to them about it, they sort of act like, well, I didn't attend to it ahead of time and I didn't find out about how to get the bus and I'm not sure how to do it. So, and I also understand there's a chapter up near Eureka that Jill O'Connell belongs to. They almost never meet because they have no way to get people to meetings. A way that I can suggest is to try to find some organization, a church or a Lions Club or Kiwanis or something. Go to that club and ask if they can help you once a week, once a month to get to a meeting. Or maybe if you can't do it once a month, once every 2 months, so that you have some order of meetings and some anticipation. In our chapter, we're fortunate we have paratransit and we have a lot of people who can travel alone. And some of us who use cabs, now that we aren't traveling alone as well as we used to, all that kind of thing. Another thing to attend to ahead of time besides the transportation is the refreshments. I used to think that was not important, and we had a chapter that didn't have refreshments. I have found that it's one way to keep people coming. They really like refreshments. So it's important to let the chapter decide sort of what they want to do. Do they want to have volunteers from the chapter who will do the refreshments, or do they want to have somebody who will purchase them every week? This again depends on whether you have a chapter with paratransit so that people wouldn't have could bring them on the bus, or whether you have chapters where it would be difficult to do that. But anyway, one way or another, they have to decide how they're going to get the refreshments and what they want them to be constituted as. We always tell our refreshment people to please bring something that people can pick up in their fingers and that they don't have to cut up before they serve it. So something like a bagel or, you know, a little muffin, or not those big cake muffins, they'll put you to sleep for the whole meeting because you will have eaten so much. But some cookies, crackers and cheese are good. Not cheese that you spread on the crackers, but little cubes of cheese, something like that. You also have to decide who's going to serve the refreshments and how it's going to be done. And I don't like to say that some things can be done only by blind people, and I guess it wouldn't have to be only by, but it sure is a lot easier if you can get a partially sighted person to do the coffee making. That's a hard thing to do. And you also sometimes need a person who's pretty strong, because in our chapter that coffee pot gets quite heavy, and we have someone now who has had some injuries to her shoulder, and she usually has to ask somebody to help her with the coffee pot. And had to last year. We have a different person in charge this year, although Velma also volunteers a lot of time back there. We need to know that somebody's going to clean up. We don't have in our chapter a definite group to clean up, and so what happens is those people who are sort of observant look around and say, gosh, we've got to get this place in some kind of order. Probably it would be better if we had somebody whose assignment was cleaning up. But in every organization that I've ever belonged to, cleanup is not popular. Another thing to think about ahead of time is who's going to do your legislative update each month. We have the California connection and the Washington connection that will keep us aware on the CCB list. You can hear an awful lot of things. Dan has a number now in the office where you can call, and he will bring you up to exact date on what is happening. So there's not a reason not to have good legislative information. The agenda has to be prepared before the meeting. And you sort of start with it by taking notes from the previous meeting, by what was left over that you didn't get to, or what has to be decided further at the next meeting, those kinds of things. Then between that meeting and the next meeting, there are notes that you can take at preparatory. For example, Beth Berenson has in Northern California a list of what's going on in Northern California, much of which is generated by what the Lighthouse is doing. But you can get information from that if you find people aren't able to get that Beth Berenson, they aren't using email or something. You can assemble some of those things. And then there's the meeting itself. Where you hold the meeting is, and as some of you have already said, is quite difficult sometimes because it's hard to get a place that will have you and that doesn't cost so much. We are extremely fortunate in having the Lighthouse, which is very generous to us, and we have to keep to a certain schedule that accords with their schedule, but that's a minor matter. And we generally, once a year, give the Lighthouse a contribution, but it's nothing like what it would cost if we had to rent the place all the time. That's a good place for us. We have a kitchen and we have some tables. Lots of people don't have that advantage. Those who meet in a restaurant frequently have to use whatever refreshment the restaurant would provide, and that's what you use as the come-on to let you have your meeting there, is that you'll buy some food there. So lots of things are decided by the meeting place and the meeting time and date. For a long time, the San Francisco chapter was very proud because we met on a Wednesday evening. And the reason we met on a Wednesday evening was that so many members of our chapter were employed that they wanted to come and do this after work. Now, we often bragged about that because, as you know, it's not easy to find a place where a lot of blind people are employed. But loads of our chapter were at that time, enough that the majority wanted it that way. We have since gotten older. Many of us have retired, and we haven't gotten an influx of a lot of younger people, though we've had a great influx of new people that I would say are, you know, beyond 40, but they're not starting out in employment. So we don't have that demand anymore, and we have therefore had to take a Saturday, as everybody else does, to have the meetings. But you sort of have to analyze your chapter to see what people want and what helps them to come to the meetings. The meeting place has to have some way of providing hearable information. In a restaurant, it must be awfully hard because there's so much other noise in the restaurant. In the Lighthouse, we do have a microphone, but we frequently find that it doesn't have the batteries, and a couple of the people who come to meetings who have hearing difficulties have difficulty because we can't make things hearable to them. They usually don't complain. I notice that even among sighted people, nobody wants to say, "I can't hear." They'll put up with not hearing, and they'll tell you about it afterwards, but they won't tell you about it at the time. When you start the meeting, the good thing is to have everybody go around and introduce himself. I've always heard that's a blind thing, and I must say it's a great thing because you're not happy till you know who's there. The next thing is to read the agenda to people and see if there's anything they want to add to it, and then to do the kind of ordinary cleanup things that have to be done from one meeting to the next, the minutes, the treasurer's report, that sort of thing. And then you get into the meat of the meeting, what your activities you are planning and what you have planned already and how it's coming along, all that sort of thing. The happiest thing that can happen to a chapter is to get some kind of project that you can work on. And in the last several years, we've been very fortunate to have a fundraising effort that we try every year to raise a couple of $1,000s if we can to contribute to someone. And it's usually someone who needs a computer or other kinds of equipment and can't get it from rehab or the other advisable sources. And that keeps us going. It gives us a motive, and it gives us something that we like to do and that we feel proud of. And our chapter has improved immeasurably since we've had that on our docket. you can consider whether you want to combine the meeting with another activity. As Linda said before, we combine ours with going out to lunch afterwards. We do have refreshments, but we also go out to lunch, anybody who wants to. We usually have 10 or 12 people who go to a restaurant and have lunch, and it makes the meeting kind of long. So we start at 10 o'clock in the morning, and we're still eating lunch at about 2. So you can't do this and say you don't have a lot of time, because it does take time to do these things. But, you know, we do it only once a month. So the people who say, well, gee, all week long I work and Saturday's the only day I get to sleep, I don't have a lot of patience with that. That's only by the time you take out the Christmas dinner and the summer months when you may not meet, you know, it's only about 8 or 9 times a year that you have to get up on Saturday out of the 52. So I don't think... So I don't find that a very obliging way to do at it. Between meetings, the problem is to telephone the people who weren't there. You wish that they would tell you that they missed the meeting, and they'd call you and say, gee, what went on? But I want to tell you that doesn't happen very often. But anyway, even if they don't want to know, it's a good thing to let them, in the hope that that will make them want to come to the next one. Fundraising is always a problem, and we have had some extremely good experiences with this. And the connection with the fundraiser that I told you about, in connection with the fundraiser, we were able to generate among members of the chapter enough money that we paid the prizes for the raffle out of what we had, so that we could say to anyone who bought a ticket, this goes directly to our $2,000, not to any prizes, not to anything. The other thing is, we have one man in our club who has had a good deal of business experience. He knows how to write a business letter. He knows how businesses operate. And he has written to businesses a number of times each year and has gotten $200 from this one, $500 from that one, a contribution from Safeway every time, a contribution from Walgreens every time. And he has contributed immeasurably to our ability to raise funds. That's my 1 minute. Gone. Thanks, everybody.
Madam Chair, one quick question for Lynn.
Right.
Yes.
That has to do with, what about programs? I know in ours, I find if we have programs, especially with speakers, we end up getting better programs.
I had to skip programs on my little list because I was running out of time. But anyway, that is the hardest part. We do have a chapter of about 20 or 25 people, but we rarely have all of the 25 present. So if you call a city director in a place like San Francisco, a director of Muni or something, and we want that person to come, and you say we have 20 people, he's not often inspired to come. He wants to hold, he wants 50 people or something like that. Now, the Silicon Valley can say we have 80 people. They don't have to say not all of them attend. They can be quiet about that. But they have a lot more incentive for the individual to come than we can generate. And program is, as far as I'm concerned, one of the really frustrating parts of the whole business, keeping program interesting and active.
But I think what we do sometimes is we look at programs specifically for blind or visually impaired. There are many other community programs out there, not just for blind or visually impaired, that are really tremendous, and so we've tried to expand and get away just from the blindness program.
That's a good idea, Ken. Anything else?
Any other questions?
Do you want me to stay here early so somebody else can sit here?
Everybody can fret. Thank you. Thank you, Wynn.
There we are. I got to leave.
Should I move?
No, Donna can sit here.
Yeah, I can. I'll actually be over here.
Donna's at the podium. Yeah. The next speaker will be Donna Pomerantz, and she's vice president, and she's going to be speaking on the duties and issues of the vice president.
All righty. And Wynn made it easy for me because one of the things... Hold on, let me fight with this beast here. I will win. I won. Okay. Wynn made it very easy for me because one of the things that I was going to say from the very beginning is that, I'd like to say that each and every chapter has its own personality, and what works for each chapter. And so some of the things that I'll share today, you may be able to take back and use, and some of them just may not work for your chapter. Again, every chapter has its its own personality. So you can pick and choose, you know, what you can apply to your home chapter. And that's one of the things that I learned, you know, very early is, you know, this is the thing of what makes CCB one of the best organizations, you know, in my opinion, that's made up of blind people, is that we are a democracy, and CCB, you know, different chapters can have their different personality, and that's what makes it work. So, you know, we're all allowed to pretty much have our own personality and do what works best for each of us in our chapters. Of course, there are some core principles that I want to share, and hopefully you can use some of the things that, you know, that I'll be talking about today. And hopefully you can take them back to your home chapter. The good thing is that when you receive all the handouts, you know, you'll read through the handouts and go, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I remember that, and all that good stuff. So that's going to be good. One of the other things I'd like to do is I'd like to give special thanks to someone who's not here today, but, you know, I'd like to give a special thanks to Artis Basin because, and yes, applause, please, because she made my job of preparation very easily without even realizing it because, you know, I have a number of documents and things from the different other organizations that I'm involved with, and, you know, some bodies I chair, some I co-chair, vice chair, you know, I'm a member who terrorizes on a regular basis, so. and these different organizations have their own documents, but I wanted to take from our stuff because, you know, it belongs to us, and I went on the website and I saw artists everywhere, so it worked out very well. She created a manual that's on the website that, you know, I took a number of different things from some of these manuals. The first thing is a vice president will share some of the president's duties as the president deems necessary. As leading a chapter, it's a joint responsibility between the officers. A lot of times in my chapter, you know, Vince and I work together as a team. And, you know, Vince is our chapter president. And, you know, there are times that he'll remember things that I'll forget, and I'll remember things that he'll forget. And, you know, we just pick up, you know, right there with each other. We work very, very well together. So it's a joint responsibility. Sometimes he may ask me to take on a duty or, you know, something that he's not able to do, and he'll give me a call or shoot me an email or whatever, and, you know, kind of say, hey, you know, can you take care of this, that, and the other thing, or can you print out the agenda or whatever, and you know, I'll help him out with that. Often the vice president's responsibility is to direct and participate in committee activity. In our chapter, we have several subcommittees that do the work of the chapter. Because in our chapter, folks like to get together and eat. You know, that's a common thing here, I think. So we meet once a month. We're about 55 members strong now. And we meet once a month, and we meet from 11:30 to 2 on Saturdays. You know, we have our lunch, we have our business meeting, we have our speakers, you know, depending on, you know, what it is the membership wants. We were going to have a speaker from the California Telephone Access Program just recently. And in speaking with the representative, I found out that they're going to be adding some different services. And she told me, well, you know, I'd be happy to come and speak to your group. She said, but there are a number of new things that I can't talk about. So wait until next year and have us over. So another thing is a vice president should be prepared to lead any meeting. If the president is sick or late or, you know, I'm turning the page. Got to give you description there. And when I printed it out, it didn't print out real well either, both sides. But anyway, vice president needs to be prepared to lead the meeting at, you know, paratransit. You know, the president could be late. You could have a share ride from who knows where. And so you need to be prepared to, you know, step up, you know, right there and take over that meeting until, you know, your president gets there or if they're ill or something for that matter. The president may ask the vice president to also have a copy of the activities which need to take place between meetings. You know, that goes back to where I was talking about earlier, you know, that we kind of help each other. and remind each other of things. It is best if the president delegates some responsibilities to the vice president to facilitate everything getting finished in a timely manner, because if your president does everything by themselves, that's a pretty heavy burden to carry. You know, it's imperative that you have a good, strong team of officers. It's also prudent for the president to work with the vice president as a member, as a mentor, so that when the time comes for the gavel to be passed or whatever, your vice president knows all the different activities and things that go on, and you know that they're not surprised. The vice president may encounter
difficult people.
We don't have any of those either. A vice president may encounter a difficult person occasionally that may feel more comfortable, you know, talking to the vice president rather than the president, or vice versa. And they may receive a complaint or two. The vice president should listen carefully to all complaints. Of course, you should try to gently, you know, tell the member, you know, hey, you know, talk to, you know, our president, or, you know, we can both go talk to them. But if they don't want to, listen to the complaint, you know, because you don't want to, you know, kind of, you know, and I'm sorry, I'm a little more informal. You don't want to blow off your members because, you know, you don't want them to go away. Listen to the complaints and suggestions. And again, as I said, it encouraged, you know, the person or the group to approach the president directly. But if they choose not to, you know, then of course you need to use tact and good judgment when handling, you know, the group or working with the person. Often the person that's bringing up a concern to you will simply want a sympathetic, you know, response, someone to listen to them. And by you listening to them, it may help them just to speak it out, work it through, you know, in their mind. Immediately, if a complaint or a concern is brought to the vice president, she or he should take it to the president so that the lines of communication are open and, you know, you can work on resolutions and things like that so that the outcomes could be, you know, you need to make sure they're communicated to your president. You want to keep, a united group of officers. And, you know, sometimes suggestions will come to you and it may be something you didn't think about. And, you know, it could help to enhance the chapter. Ideally, people should always approach their president. But sometimes, you know, they may feel more comfortable, as I said earlier, with the vice president and so on and so forth. Vince and I talk regularly about different things that may come up. And sometimes people bring things to Ben, sometimes people bring things to me. But we talk about, you know, the issues and come to resolutions. And, you know, we will do further follow-up if necessary. A president may choose to consult with the other officers as well. Maybe, depending on what the issue is, you may need to have a board meeting of your officers. It just depends on the situation. But again, communication is key. The president may appoint all committee chairpersons, but sometimes the president may appoint their vice president to chair one of the committees or to oversee all committee activities, just depending on the situation. Again, it goes back to the personality of your chapter. This may be part of the responsibility of the vice president. Did I hear 1 minute?
No.
Oh, okay.
You're fine.
I'm listening to typing and, you know, all that good stuff. So I'm like, okay, here I go. Just let me know. You might need to get the hook.
No. You have 5 minutes here.
5 minutes. Okay, thank you. She's a good time monitor, isn't she? Again, the president may want, sometimes the president may ask the chair to appoint, you know, other committee members and things like that, depending on, again, what the situation may be. Usually the chair of the committee, you know, has some input as to who the members of the committee should be. In our chapter, we speak to our committee chairs and, you know, kind of talk to each other, finding out, you know, who would be good. Because sometimes some people are too shy to volunteer. Hey, who wants to help do this? All of a sudden, everybody's hands are in their laps or eating their food, but they're very, very still. So, you know, sometimes we'll meet together outside the meeting, and or somebody may have a knowledge that, you know, somebody is interested in something, but they don't want to say anything. For instance, you know, someone talks a lot about advocacy. You know, and you may gently ask, you know, oh, you know, Bill, do you want to serve on our advocacy committee? You know, and so on and so forth. And sometimes if you ask folks, you know, and you know your membership, so, you know who would be fine with that and who wouldn't. But we talk about it as well. And sometimes a one-on-one call, you know, talking about, you know, because people may have a lot of questions that they may not want to ask in the chapter. So, you know, that's one of the ways, you know, that the vice president could help deal, the president deal with the committee. The president or vice president, the president or vice president, you know, may work and instruct the chairs of the committees, you know, help them with, you know, defining duties and different things. I want to make sure I'm not repeating myself here. Sometimes the vice president may be asked to step in and be a support or officer liaison for a committee as designated by the president. There may be one committee that's having a little bit of difficulty being, you know, more active, and maybe, you know, vice president or president haven't been sitting in as much, so the president may ask the vice president, you know, hey, can you work with such and such committee, you know, they're not being as active, and just offer your help and encourage them to, you know, do different things, whether it be more fundraising. So what I want to say is, in closing, the main duty of a vice president is to be there, ready and willing to step in at a moment's notice when asked by your president. A vice president may need to step in. For several meetings, if the president is ill or, you know, whatever may happen, the vice president must be open, flexible, aware of the goings on of the chapter and all of its members. One of the things, and, you know, our chapter members, you know, think I'm just running around. You know, just to run around. Mitch kind of teases me and says I've got ADD. But there's a method to my madness. You know, I'm always, you know, walking around the room, passing the mic, you know, and things like that, because, you know, that helps me know our audience and know what's going on. And you know, I'm not one of those sneaky people that runs around and doesn't let anybody know that I'm there either. That's something that really annoys me. Everybody knows that I'm there. And so, you know, that's how I'm aware. You know, because I'm partially sighted, I can't see facial expressions. I can't, you know, see if people are fumbling with this, that, or the other thing. So I walk around to see how things are going in the chapter meeting, you know, with all our members. Sometimes the vice president may see, you know, something coming up on the horizon and, you know, should share their observations with their president. We all have different strengths and weaknesses, but in working together as a team, and working together as a team that is transparent, open, and communicates regularly, you will have a very dynamic, strong team and or chapter. Again, it all belongs to all of us. We are all a team. Yes, some of us, you know, have a little more muscles and carry a little more than others. But, you know, you can be surprised how you can encourage other folks gradually. It's not easy. You can't do it alone. But if you have a core team that knows its strengths and weaknesses, then you can really get some things done. So, anyway, thank you very much.
Okay, everybody. Are there any questions for Donna?
Yes.
Yes.
It sounds like what you're really saying is that the vice president almost kind of needs to be a president in waiting. because they really need to be someone who is capable of being president, and that's probably something that needs to think about when you elect a vice president. But is there someone that you think can be president? I know I had a situation years ago, first PM would never do anything like this, but the president went out of town and forgot to tell me he was going out of town. But the day of the meeting came, the time of the meeting came, you know, president, you know, everybody started telling me, well, you're the vice president, you got to go. And I have to say, you know, I was flustered. I wasn't prepared. There are people, and Ken and Kim know who they are, who are more than willing to help you run a meeting.
Yes.
But they have their own agenda.
And for those that might not have heard Andy's question, Andy basically said very well that from my presentation, it sounds like a vice president should be prepared to be a president in waiting. And that's very true. And that's why communication is the key. That actually happened one time with our president, and I didn't tell anybody that I was surprised that he wasn't going to be there. But because of the fact that we communicate regularly, because we go over the agenda together and all of that, yeah, I was a little flustered. And I got the call when I was on the way to the chapter meeting, and, you know, I thought, okay, well, fine, then, you know, things happen. So communication is the key. And, yes, you should be prepared to kind of be a president in waiting, so to speak. And that's why earlier in the presentation I did mention that the president should mentor their vice president to prepare them for that. So, yes, you are correct.
I have a question, Donna.
Yes.
What do you do when the person who is a vice president has a family matter or business matters or whatever that really cause him or her to have lots less time than had been anticipated? So that there are a number of meetings at which he or she cannot be present. There may be a meeting at which the president can't be there, but the vice president can't either. What do you do about that?
That's a very good question. For those that didn't hear Wynn's question, she asked, what do you do if there is a vice president that may have a lot of family matters or business or things that come up, and they might not have as much time as they originally anticipated? This is where it is key to have a strong group of core officers, because from what I've seen and in my experience, yes, the vice president should be prepared to, you know, step in.
So should the second
vice. But
there
will be times that vice president and president may not be there. At that point, your secretary should be prepared to step in, or your treasurer should be prepared to step in.
Our second vice.
Or well, that's true, although we don't have a second vice.
But some of us do. Yeah.
Obviously, if you have that component in your chapter, because in our chapter we have president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, and member at large. And we use our member at large position to teach someone who's kind of a new and up and coming. This is what we talked about in our board meeting. And if you have second vice, the second vice should step in. But that's why it's so important that anyone who runs for any office needs to be prepared that maybe one day they may need to step in there and run the meeting, you know, or help, you know, with the minutes, and so on. You need to have backups. So I hope that answered a little.
What about the possibility of having, as a part of the board of directors, the immediate past president, which some chapters and some groups do, but many do not?
I think that, again, that definitely goes to the personality in one's chapter. If the immediate past president is still very active, then I would say if your constitution calls for it, you definitely should keep them on.
Yeah, but what if it doesn't call for it?
Then you need to rewrite your constitution, and that's an easy thing kind of sort of to do. We do have a constitution and bylaws committee in our chapter as well. I forgot about that one. I'm sorry. We're working on rewriting our constitution right now. And you can make an amendment to your constitution so that your board can be defined to include your immediate past president. That's the beauty of CCB. We're a democracy. So all you have to do is rewrite.
Are there any more questions for Donna?
Thank you.
Thank you, you guys. Give Donna her hand. She did a good job. Okay, we have Ann Kaiser. She's going to be talking about the Office of Secretary. And we know how much all of us love taking notes and minutes, you know? Just love it. So we'll give Ann her 15 minutes, and if there's any questions, you can ask questions afterwards.
So my 15 minutes of fame here. First of all, let me tell you that, I have no notes because I thought we were going to get the packets. And then Dan had offered to actually braille, you know, from the CCB office, braille up my thing for me. And I said, nah, I'm going to get the packet. And that system failed me. What can I say?
Mitch was brailing from scratch last night at 2:30. Yeah.
So here we are. I'm going to wing it. So hopefully I can remember all my salient points. And, you know, well, the basics are come down to the secretary does the minutes. Thank you. That's all there is. No. Interesting thing about secretaries, some chapters have some presidents assign correspondence duties to the secretary. Some secretaries actually have both a secretary and a recording secretary. Well, my experience has pretty much primarily been as a recording secretary, as our presidents have been the ones who did the correspondence or assigned someone else to do them. So I'm coming from strictly the perspective of the recording secretary. So yeah. There we go. I've been secretary of the Capital Chapter about six times now over the past 15 years. And I remember my first experience as a secretary. I recorded the meeting on cassette. And I sat down and wrote the minutes out on the Perkins. And I wrote everything that everyone said and every little nuance. And, my gosh, it went. I had pages and pages, and I read on and on and on. And I'm hearing people kind of shuffling a little bit, and I'm hearing throat clearings. And next thing I'm hearing, a couple of those. And, what I came away from that, learned from that experience was, do not lose your audience, folks. Do not lose your audience. Otherwise, that's just a crashing bore. Nobody wants to hear you going on and on and on and on. So, very quickly, I learned how to take in my case, I pretty much always recorded the meetings on cassette, and learned very quickly how to do minutes that covered all the basics but were concise and succinct and kept everyone's attention. And I think that's something that has to kind of come from experience. That's nothing I can really tell you how to do. I think it's sort of a matter of personal preference as to how you feel is important and what you feel are the points that have to be stressed. And, you know, obviously the basics of the meeting, which of course are, you know, what I always started out doing was doing a mental count of the members present. So I was able to write, you know, there were 37 people in attendance and our guest speaker and blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, the basic functions, the meat and potatoes of the meeting, of course, all the business things, the reading of the previous minutes, which I didn't record. I said, well, why don't we hear that again? The treasurer's report, the legislative report, committee reports, any of that kind of stuff, the guest speaker, and, you know, with a guest speaker, what you want to do is kind of give an outline of who they represent, what the purpose of the agency or the, you know, if it's a recreational type program or whatever it is, and just kind of give the basics of it, but you don't need to record everything that was said. But, you know, like I say, I think just keeping it moving, keeping people's interest, you know, don't go on too long on any particular subject. You know, when there's a discussion, you know, when let's say there's an issue that's going to be voted on and there's some discussion, you know, you don't have to go into all the details. And if the vote is cast, obviously, you want to record, you know, if it was a, obviously, if the motion carried unanimously, that's fine. If you had, you know, maybe two oppositions or how many, you know, you might even say, well, so-and-so moved and so-and-so seconded. You know, that's just personal preference. That's what I do. Because a lot of times people want to know who didn't vote for this or who, you know, sometimes it's a matter of curiosity who, you know, who brought up the motion, who seconded it, who was against it, who abstained, you know, that kind of thing. So I guess the next point I would say, since we're all, it's safe to assume we're all blind or visually impaired. Probably most of us would use some type of recording device, either cassette or a note taker or some kind of a PDA. In my case, with cassettes, is always a kind of a scary thing. Once in a while, you'll have your tape recorder for some strange reason didn't charge the night before, and you have no battery power. So the good thing is to anticipate this. You know, bring, if you can sit near the, you know, if you're in a room where there is an electric outlet, you can plug it in, you know, bring the power cord, plug it in, or bring an extra set of batteries. Just, you know, it's probably always a good policy to have an extra set of batteries in case things do glitch out. Bring an extra cassette in case when you were counting on decides to not work or it gets eaten by the recorder. You can always take it out and it's all happened to me at one time or another. Monitor the cassette as you're recording it. Make sure things are coming out. It's a bummer when you have some really important points that somehow didn't get recorded, and that's happened to me too. I speak from experience. In the case of a note taker, like a Braille note or Braille and Speak or Braille Light or anything, a Pac-Mate, learn to use its software. I learned to use the word processor software and get really familiar with it, get really comfortable with it. Otherwise, there's another whole set of dangers that you can find yourself accidentally either deleting something or sometimes, you know, maybe you are reviewing something and you go back to write and you end up writing over what you've just reviewed. So the real point is to get to know that software really, really well. I think a really important thing when you go home to do your minutes, especially if there is a chance that maybe you missed some of the points, maybe the recorder didn't work, maybe you didn't pick up some things, write them within the week or two of when you get home. If you do them early, your memory will help you a lot of times pick up a lot of things that if you wait till the last minute, like I have done too, the Saturday morning before the meeting, I'm still finishing up my minutes. You forget a lot of things. And you forget a lot of kind of, you know, things that may not seem that important at the time, but when you're having to go back and kind of piece it together for the president's agenda, because that's something that is crucial to remember. Your minutes are the key to helping the president do their next agenda. And it's crucial that the president get your minutes as soon as possible to start working on that next meeting's agenda. And so you really, as president, it's kind of it's a little bit scary because it is a very powerful position, because you do have your finger on the pulse of that chapter or the affiliate, whatever the case may be. You are the one that is responsible for recording everything that went on. And your minutes are going to either, you know, make or break that next meeting. And once in a while, things just do happen. Once in a while, the recorder just didn't work, and you have no way of knowing. Or know, you could have thought you charged the Braille note the night before, and you get in there, and you're do-do-do-do, and you check the power level, and you're battery low. Oh, my God, what do I do? You know, sometimes something come unplugged, and there you go. And you're having to just kind of, well, I hope I can remember this long enough to come home and write it down. And that's actually happened to me, too. And sometimes it even works. So, the point is to try to anticipate those things and, you know, don't let it happen if you possibly can. The other thing with our chapter, we have a little portable PA system with a microphone and a speaker. So whoever's the secretary can sit up next near that thing and be recorded. I mean, have the recorder work really well. So that's always a helpful thing, especially in a large room like this is. And of course, fortunately, we do have the microphone. But those are the main points, and if there are any questions, I'll be glad to entertain them.
And, yes, anybody have any questions? She's got 10 minutes.
Ooh, good. Minute.
Good.
How long do you even keep your minutes after you check them? If you do, how long?
He said, do you
keep them? I, in the past, I have kept them for that year. I usually don't keep them after that, but I know the last time I was secretary, I got a little bit smarter about hanging on to the minutes both in... Well, you know, I started out, I just did them on the Perkins. Then when I got a little more computer savvy and a little more proficient in Microsoft Word or whatever, any kind of word processor software, I just kept them on my computer and also kept the Braille copy. For the year, for the entire year until I was no longer secretary, and then I turn them over to whoever my successor would be.
Can I have a similar question? Because I was a chapter secretary for 5 years, and I was told that there are some legal requirements regarding minutes, that minutes are actually a record of the organization.
Andy, I actually don't know that answer, but that's a very good point. And it reminds me also that when the president goes to the bank to open a bank account, they ask for those minutes to prove who the officers are, that, you know, so-and-so is president, so-and-so is secretary. So those people that, and treasurer, those people that are signatories on that account, which usually, of course, the president and treasurer, those have to be reflected in the minutes that have to be brought to them.
Is there anybody that can actually answer Andy's question?
Yeah, I think the actuality is that minutes are legal, at least if you're under the state's 501c3, then the state minutes are going to be your legal minutes. If you have your own 501c3, and some chapters do, you need to maintain those minutes. And I think it's probably 7 years, but
five to seven.
The real issue here is that the minutes should really reflect. We heard Mitch talk about the history of CCB. You don't get the history if you don't keep the minutes. So the minutes are really a history of your chapter.
Dan?
Yes. Well, next question.
Dan?
Yes.
I have more of a comment because a lot of chapters have websites, and I was really neat looking at Humboldt County's reading their minutes online. And, you know, it's almost like today a secretary needs to be really computer literate. I mean, I know it's not fair to those people who just use the Perkins, but when you have a chapter with websites and emailing your officers and the president and stuff, it just goes so much smoother if you have email capability and you're literate. But I know that chapters really should be, if you have a website,
You know, it's inexcusable not to put your minutes up on the website. We have it.
Yeah, good point. Yes, Alice?
I'm not Alice.
That's Mona.
Oh,
that's Mona.
Oh, Mona, sorry.
I'm here.
I know you're here, Lee. I know Donna told me.
Yes, I agree that minutes should be put on a website, et cetera, et cetera. And I like the idea, unfortunately, we don't have a website, but I also think that the minutes should be either read in Braille or read in an art print by the secretary. I don't like having meetings on the corner or on the microphone.
No, that, and
I mean, I think they should be literate, either the ability to read your own writing and Braille, or read your own writing and art print.
Actually, you don't. No. That brought up a really excellent, probably my, that was my final point in my written presentation that I don't have, was the reading of the minutes is so important. You know, reading them well, you know, get to know those. Even if you write them, you still have to be familiar enough with them that you're not stopping and starting, stumbling around, losing your place. I mean, I've heard secretaries do that, and it is so irritating. And I think, you know, it's as important to present them well as it is to write them well. And I couldn't agree with you more. Keep the record. Keep it all. You know.
One more question, and that's it. Got to get.
Also, keeping a minute, I've kept mine in my since 2004. It's good for the, like this time, we have to find a new space for a meeting for the month of November only. I went back and looked at the minutes of the meetings that have been disastrous. This restaurant has been disastrous, and I know not to call that restaurant anymore. So,
yeah.
That helped. And that was great as well.
Were you able to hear that, Mike? Okay, Mona said that it's another reason to keep minutes is that so often in a situation where maybe the you had meetings that went, you know, that were kind of a disaster, the meeting place was bad, and if you record, I mean, if you keep record of those things, you can, that'll help you in the future to maybe avoid those things happening again, avoid that certain location that didn't work out. So that's another reason to hang on to those minutes. And you know what, all the times that I have been president, like I say, I don't think I ever held on to them that long. But with the computer now, it'll always be on the computer. Even if I lost my Braille copy, it's all going to be there where I can access it later. So that's
okay.
I've learned my lesson.
Everybody, you can give Anne a hand. She did a great job for nobody having any notes.
No notes.
No notes, okay? And Lee made it. Give them a hand. They made it. Okay, you guys, we're going to have Lee Morton do the, she's going to talk about the Treasury, which I think is, very important. We got to have money in the bank today.
And you got 15 minutes on the timekeeper.
Hello, everybody. Glad to be here.
Anyway,
I will see what I can remember from my notes. The Treasurer is the Chief Financial Officer of the organization, and there are a lot of things that you are responsible for. First of all, you are responsible to give a report of all the financial activity that took place between meetings. Any fundraiser you may have had, or even if it was just you collected dues and that was your only income coming in, or even if it was you didn't do anything that month and it was like your balance was $1,400 and didn't do anything, and so it's still $1,400. You still have a responsibility to your chapter to report that every month. And I always do now. I always read mine in Braille, but I always keep a backup on disk, because then when I turn it over to my replacement, I, not knowing what format they get, I can always just give them the disk. But there are some other things that you are responsible for every year. If you read the CCB literature, the treasurer is responsible for turning in the chapter roster to the state organization. Everybody thinks it's the secretary. Now, I will admit, a lot of times, I certainly work very closely with my secretary on that one, because sometimes they may have an address that I don't have. So, of course, you're working together on it, but the treasurer is the one who should know, did so-and-so pay or not? And, in fact, I've even gotten, when I first started as treasurer, I just wrote down that they paid, but now, just so there's no dispute, I'll even write down whether they paid cash or a check. I learned that one, you know, kind of over the years of doing it. So you've got to get that into the office, and March 1st is the day that it's actually due. So you really want to try your best to get it into them by, I would say, around the middle of February, if at all possible. I know there is always some wayward person who's going to screw it up and doesn't get their dues on time, and you always end up pulling your hair out. It's just an aggravation. It's part of the joys of being treasurer, but that's part of your job. You also, twice a year, have to make sure that your chapter decides how much and what they're going to do for door prizes for the convention, what they are going to do for, you know, you've got to make sure that your delegates and alternate delegates or president, whoever you're paying for to go to the convention, you make sure their checks get ready on time. You make sure that whatever donation your chapter is going to give to the state, that all that gets taken care of. And so you're the one that's responsible for that. I also do believe that even if you're not the chair of a particular fundraiser your chapter is running, you are certainly on the fundraising team to make sure that goes well. Because you are the chief financial officer, and good or bad, good or ill, everything falls on you. And another thing that I think is a very important thing, I think the treasurer should be the one to spearhead, the treasurer and the president together to spearhead going down to the bank to bring in the month, you know, to get the new signature cards every year.
Yes.
Now, I will give you a bit of free advice that I have learned. You have to have the minutes of the meeting where the election was held so you know who the officers were that got elected. I usually like to have each one of the signatories there, so there's no question about it. Some banks do let you bring a signature card back and have people sign it, but I really think it goes smoother to have everybody there. And if you start to get any flack, a lot of times just go to the head of new accounts, because banks want to do, you know, the older employee sometimes wants to keep a happy customer, where sometimes the new guy wants to show how efficient he is, and so they end up being so efficient that they get everybody angry. So a lot of times go to the one at the top, because they will probably more likely help you with your situation and get the card done and have the minutes with you, and you could, it'll probably take an hour on an afternoon, but it's worth it for your sanity.
Yes.
And another thing, anything you can do to make it interesting for your chapter members, I personally do. One thing I do in my chapter, we do have a bit of an interest-bearing account. It's not a lot of money, and it's like, I'll do something with my reports, like, our opening balance is $1,200. We took in $50 in the sandwich sale and 19 cents interest. Let's hear it for that 19 cents interest!
Yeah!
Because I want to make sure that they're
awake.
It's got to be almost a joke with all the treasurers in our chapter now. We do that with everybody. You know, and we, it gets everybody interested. They know that's coming with the treasurer's report.
Yes.
Gets them listening to it.
Yes.
And then you also, in your report, you want to list what was taken in, but you also want to list your disbursements. Like, we wrote a check for $25 to cover a sandwich sale, and to pay so and so for the sandwiches. And we might have written the $200 for the delegate check for the convention. And then, of course, you finish up with an ending balance. And my brain is too fried to try to sit down and figure that out for you right now, but, you know, the figures I just gave you, but I figured you can understand what I'm saying, what you're supposed to do. And it really is a very important job. I think it's it could, I used to think it was a boring job, and in some ways I suppose it's a lot of paperwork, but it is an essential part of the chapter, and I think it's very important to really be involved with all aspects, how much is going in and how much is coming out, and to really also try to promote the fundraising part of your chapter. Because let's face it, most of our chapters, and some of them do have 501c3, yeah, but most of our chapters are small chapters with people who are basically gainfully underemployed and, you know, aren't exactly rolling in the big bucks. And so you've got to watch the money, and you've also tried to get the money coming in wherever you can. So that's about what I've got to say. I think that summed up what my report was. I know it was on, it is on the CCB site, so even if the papers didn't get here, a lot of you, if you didn't do it, can download it, and I'm sure they'll get here eventually and they'll be mailed or something.
Yes, they'll be mailed.
I did write a treasurer's report. Yes. It's probably better written than what I presented it now, but
I have a question first. I have not asked a question yet. Thank you. Lee, I have a question. When it comes to the credentials and the treasurer and the count of the members, is that up to the treasurer and the president, or just the treasurer?
I personally do it. I talk to the president about it because I don't know everything, and I don't claim to. I think we sit down and work together.
Okay.
And I sit down, usually with the president and the secretary,
yes,
and I say, okay, I'm the one that knows whether they paid their dues or not.
Okay.
They may know something like, well, but this is not his home chapter.
Yes. Okay.
And they were just giving the full dues just to support the chapter.
Right.
They might know that stuff that I don't know. And so I think the treasurer is the one that's the bottom line that sends a lot of this stuff in. But the president, you know, you do it with the president. And I think, I really do think, this is one of the things, I think I'll make a question. You really are an executive board elected.
Okay.
Yes.
Because you are all four working together.
Yes.
And although one person is responsible for putting their name on the dotted line for a certain thing, like for the minutes, for the treasurer's report, for making sure the meetings go smoothly, but I do think we are a team, and we are all working together on this thing. And I think all of us as officers of the chapter need to work and make sure that the credentials form gets in, that all the information is given. And I don't think the world is going to fall apart if the secretary has all the information, with the addresses, and gives that copy to the treasurer, and the treasurer turns it all in. The treasurer knows who paid and they didn't. It's a collaborative effort. But the main thing is the treasurer is the one that is responsible, because they know who paid and who hasn't.
Okay, is there any question from somebody who hasn't asked any questions yet? Okay, Robert, go ahead. And you're next, whoever that's.
I'm not clear on the non-profit one has to go in.
There's a form.
At the end of the year.
Yeah, the chapter. Usually the state, state office sends that out to you, and the treasurer. I believe the treasurer works that out also with
the president.
The president, I think, I believe the treasurer and the president work together on it.
Yes.
A lot of this stuff, but the treasurer, again, a lot of times the treasurer has the information of how much. The president may know, okay, this fundraiser we had took in $1,500, let's say.
Who was that?
But the treasurer might have the exact figure of it that would really need to go in the report, and how much was expenses for it. So, I would say the treasurer might be responsible for getting the information. It's a collaborative effort.
The gentleman who had the question, that's the last question. He asked, how long do you keep your treasury report?
I may not keep the Braille copy once I've read it. I will keep it for a year, but I will keep my disc copy of things until my term is done. Because it's not hurting anything, and then I can just hand them over to the next guy. Because everything I've heard, and with my job too, says that if you are keeping records, you're supposed to do that for 7 years. Now, granted, my chapter is a small chapter. We don't have our own 501c3 or anything like that. We're very small. We're a small chapter. We make our expenses, but we're not rich. But still, I think you do things as if you were a big chapter. And sometimes, maybe previous or treasurers that follow me may want to look at. Let's see. How have the raffles been doing the last 3 or 4 years? How has sandwich sales been going? Are we losing money lately, or are we gaining money? Do we maybe need to drop that fundraiser and go to another one? You sometimes have to have that information.
Okay, everybody can give Lee a hand. She came in here and did this quick.
Pam a hand, too.
Yeah, the time monster. Okay, oh, now it's time for Mr. Metz. Oh, you got 20 minutes, and I'm holding you to it.
I've been asked to speak about fundraising, and so I'm going to do that. It's fundraising, just in general, can actually be a lot of fun to do. It can also be a very difficult and stressful thing. It really depends how well you handle it. It depends how you plan it, and that's what we're going to go over, some of the avenues of producing a fundraiser and how successful can it be versus sometimes how successful it may have or may not have been and why. First of all, the area I want to cover is planning your fundraiser. That's a real big one because you really need to get a buy-in from your chapter. And that means that you as fundraising chair or maybe the president or any other people who have ideas have to really make sure that you're going to do a fundraiser that, and here's the issue, that people are going to participate in as a chapter to do. Everyone will agree, oh yeah, we should have this kind of fundraiser, sounds good, except a lot of times when they agree to it, they agree to it from looking at it from the perspective of being a participant by going to the fundraiser, and they forget that it's also their chapter. So in essence, you might have 25 people in your chapter say, okay, yeah, let's go do a barbecue. And then you might get 5 or 10 who are going to help out and do some things. And the other 10 or 15 or sometimes 20 think they can sit and just enjoy themselves with all the other guests.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the 5 or 10 of us who end up doing stuff, being active, running around, maybe not even eating until the fundraiser is actually over, if that happens. But the concern and the problem is really getting your own members to help. I've been involved in fundraisers where I see other members from other chapters who come there to actually enjoy themselves, who bought tickets, helping us out. And some of our folks sitting at the table. That, to me, does not look good. So if you're going to have a fundraiser, you want to be certain that it is one that people will participate in, or it's not worth it. It actually ends up creating a tremendous amount of conflict. After a while, there are hostilities at times, and people get angry at each other, and things are said that sometimes should be said, sometimes shouldn't be said, but feelings are hurt, and that type of continuity is not good to maintain a chapter. So your fundraising efforts can actually help tremendous part in maintaining your chapter. You want to be certain, as I say, that you have a majority of your chapter members on your side and what they agree to do. So you have to determine if you have an older group as your chapter membership, the majority, then you're going to need to really find something, I think, that's going to be more maybe sedentary, whether it's selling candy bars, whether it's going out and buying little things that you can go ahead and sell, you know, and maybe find, like we're doing here with Guide Dog Users of California. There's an advertisement in. because we have commute mugs that we're going to sell, that's fine. But if we were to go ahead and say, we're going to get together and we're going to have, for guide dogs, what would be good? A hot dog fundraiser. I'm not sure how many of the people would actually be out there going out and doing it. So we'd probably be able to go ahead and get the supplies and do all that kind of stuff. But then when push comes to shove, you're going to have two people barbecuing, you're going to have two people serving, and all the rest are going to be waiting to be served. That doesn't work.
No.
It should really be that you have 40, 50, 60, 70 people out there waiting to be served, and 30 of you who are members actually participating in getting things prepared and served. Now, you have to determine if you have gathered all kinds of information as to where you're going to have your fundraiser. Is it going to be a pizza party? Is it going to be some kind of a dinner? Is it going to be a dance? Is it going to be something that you that will involve going out to another location? Is it going to be something that is, that you're going to be selling, as I said before, such as candy bars or maybe running, you know, some other type of a casino night or something like that, and maybe even a car wash? That would be neat too. Anyway. Obtain agreement on how the majority of your members can help. Setting up, serving, cleanup, storage of items, keeping track of inventory, handling the receipts, figuring out the profit, with the number of hours that it took you to get to that point and to produce the fundraiser, and you actually want to look at it and say to yourself, okay, how much per hour of time that we put in did we really make? If you're going to go ahead and have a fundraiser and you're putting in 50, 60, 100 hours, and you come out with $100 profit, you made a dollar an hour. Is it worth it, or is there a better fundraiser for you to look at? How will you publicize your fundraiser? Media, word of mouth, blindness-related agencies in your local community, flyers to other local chapters, flyers at work locations, if they allow it, and some don't, so you have to be careful. Talking to other organizations that you might have gone to attend their fundraisers, or talking to other organizations who might be able to assist you, such as the Lions Club, the Kiwanis Clubs, Rotary, etc. Those are all very important things. If you have a fundraiser that requires attendance, so in essence, you're actually going to have a live fundraiser. Maybe you're going to have a barbecue again, karaoke singing, stuff like that. Decide at your chapter meeting whether you wish to have door prizes, raffles, 50-50 raffle, a combination of raffles, door prizes, or 50-50 raffle. Make sure you determine ahead of time what you're going to do as far as prizes. How are you going to get those prizes? Goes back to something I think we heard a little earlier. It's going to take some planning. In planning, that means you have to write letters to different different businesses. You can get a list of some businesses through the Chamber of Commerce. There are also so many listed today on the internet. It's incredible what the information highway has allowed us as people who are blind or visually impaired to do, compared to what it took years ago. There's no reason why we can't find out who the main players are in various corporations or the presidents. I went to a place out here in L.A. We just had our fundraiser, and I got a contact from someone I knew, and they gave me the person's name. We had fried chicken as part of our meal, and I was able to get 300 pieces of fried chicken donated.
And it was good.
And Donna said it was good. And it was. So the point is you can do it, but you have to pursue it. You have to find the time to go after it. If you really want to get something, you have to go get it. It ain't going to come to you. It doesn't, even though some of the pieces of chicken were legs, they don't get up there and walk at you. Decide if your chapter has enough financial resources to do this fundraiser. If you're going to have a barbecue and it's going to cost $700 or $800 to get the various elements of that fundraiser to make it work, whether you're going to have salads, whether you're going to have corn on the cob, whether you're going to have the chicken and you have to pay for it, or if you're going to have steaks or whatever, do you have enough money in the treasury to put out for people to be able to get the product? Make sure you know exactly what your product is going to be and what you have to pick up. Plan it well in advance. You should really plan a fundraiser at least 9 months in advance to begin starting to plan it. And you really need to have almost all of it completed. This may sound strange, but you really have to have most of the makings of that fundraiser completed 6 months before it occurs. Are you going to need to sell tickets? And are you going to sell tickets at the door? Are you going to ask people to RSVP ahead of time? What we did is we did an RSVP ahead of time. I learned that actually from Orange County. They did it. And what happens when you ask people to RSVP by a certain time, then what we did is we had a special, we had two special door prizes for those who RSVP'd at the right time. And that way they were able to participate and have one special, two special door prizes in this case, so that the motivation was there for them to RSVP. That helps you a lot easier plan your menu and how much food or how much of the item you're going to need, whatever it's going to take for that fundraiser. How much profit do you want to make? That's another thing you want to try and figure out. If I sell this many tickets for this much money, and if this product is going to cost me this much money, and I subtract the positive from the negative, what do I get? If you're going to get a negative, forget the fundraiser. If you can find that you can make some money on it, good going. Realize who in your chapter can assist with certain things. For instance, driving, obtaining materials, who will cook if it's going to be that type of a fundraiser, whether or not you believe that your product will be a positive marketing tool. You want to make sure that people are going to like, and I find really if you have food and you serve good food in nice quantity, even though it's a fundraiser, some people say, well, we don't have to serve much, and I can give them a grilled cheese sandwich and charge $5. Not me. I think it really has to be something that will that they'll be looking forward to coming to the following year. Each chapter can have its own signature fundraiser. And I think that's really important. Are you aiming for a specific age group? This would include children, teens, young adults, adults, seniors, or all of the above. How do you set that up? Well, you know, today when you have some kind of a fundraiser, again, if it's food involved, and I'm not going to say all fundraisers need to be, and we can do that real quickly in a second about others. But when you do have food, you know, today's life is different. We can't just say you're going to have chicken or beef. Doesn't work that way. You have vegetarians. You have people who are vegans who will eat no kind of meat, including chicken or fish. And we always try and at least have one or two packages of the grillers or Harvest burgers or whatever those awful vegetable things are. You guys know I'm not a big sawdust. I like that. You guys know I'm not a big vegetable person. I'm not a vegetable person here. But the point is, you do have to be concerned with people's needs today and how you can meet them in your fundraiser if you want them to attend. Planning time, again, you must really plan well in advance. It does take time to obtain your location, to obtain your materials, to obtain your items, try and get some of them donated. You need to know how to write the letters. You need to know how to add your tax ID number. If you're not under a 501c3 as your own chapter, you can use the CCBs, and that's one of the reasons they really need that information at the end of the year about how much money it cost, how much you spent, and how much the profit was. Send letters out well in advance to places where you want to try and get services or donated items or whatever it might be. And as I said, most of these places like 6 months notice. Write donation letters to your to various places. Also send letters out to the local your local chapters. One of the problems that I have found is there are chapters who will go out there and will support all their local chapters. And then you also have one or two local chapters who do not support the others. And I understand the main goal in a fundraiser should really be going outside the box and getting people who do not belong to CCB. A couple of good reasons. One, because you might get some new members as a result. Isn't that a great idea? New concept. The other reason is that sometimes we do hit our own chapters up too much. Sometimes we hit ourselves up too much. If we're dealing, we heard Winifred talking about the fact earlier that when you have a chapter of mostly working people, that's one thing. When you have a chapter of people that are going from month to take care of themselves, it's hard for them to spend $15, $20 for a fundraiser. Also, at your chapter, you should have CCB brochures, alphabet cards, and be sure to include, that should be there, but also when you do your letters to the businesses, you send the brochure, an alphabet card, and be sure again to include your tax ID exempt number, the purpose of the organization, what your profits are going to. For instance, we help out in giving scholarships to persons who are blind or visually impaired. We help people in crisis intervention. We help people in advocacy. We help people this, that. We help folks who are blind or visually impaired from age zero to seniors in housing. I mean, you can do it very succinctly. You can have a very concise letter and still include that as a basis, and then have your brochure to really allow them to read the rest of the story, as we know somebody used to say, or still does, I guess. But we won't mention Paul's name. he's had enough on the internet lately. Again, you know, you want to look at your national level as well as your local levels for businesses. Some of the businesses tell you that they cannot contribute unless you write a letter to their corporate office. So again, those are easy to get in today's life on the internet. And again, if you expect attendance, inform donors of how many people you... I'm sorry, that was my heading there about attendance. If when you write your letters, also tell them you expect to have 100 or 120 people in attendance at your fundraiser, and that you will put up a donor list. Those things help too. Be certain to write thank you letters after it's over, because you want to be able to go back to them next year, and you don't want them to think that, you know, they gave you and all of a sudden you couldn't go ahead and even send them a thank you letter. Let them know how much you appreciate it, how much their contribution helped you have a successful fundraiser. Getting out in the public and selling your fundraiser items or tickets or whatever you're doing, that's tough. It's a real tough thing to do. But, you know, some people are better at that than others. They really are. And I really give them a lot of credit for doing that. So, all in all, I'm just saying you can have all kinds of fundraisers. I don't care if you have little items that you find from some kind of an import-export item that you can, place that you can buy for $5 and sell for $10. You know, when you look at the profitability of some of these items that we even buy, I don't care if it's QVC or their Home Shopping Network, or if you go to the corner flea market, believe me, these people are buying stuff for $2 and selling it for $20. If they can do that, you can buy it for $4 and sell it for $10. It's still a profit for your chapter. It's still a profit to serve the people that we need to serve.
It's still the profit that you need to maybe help somebody go out to disabled service students, disabled student services places in the community college colleges, and talk to them and say, hey, I'd like to meet with the group of blind people that you have here at this college. Could you pass these flyers out and bring those? That's how you're going to help your chapter. That's how you're going to help the state. That's how you're going to help advance blind students of California along with your local chapters. We need to get young people going okay. in this organization.
Gracias,
or it's going to be gone. There have been a lot of people that have worked very hard, and it's taken many, many, many fundraisers to get where we've gotten. And unfortunately, lately, there are times when we look like we're going backwards. And we're going to go forward, and I think the one thing that I want to say, when you have a fundraiser, listen to some of your younger people. Don't just say that we can't do it because we've never done it that way. Yeah. Give them the opportunity. Even if it doesn't work the first time, it might work the second. I know when I got into the LA chapter, they said, well, we've had barbecues and it didn't work. And the first few, and lately we have gone downward a little bit from what we did at the beginning. But we started out where we made like $1,000 and $1,500 profit. And there were other things that have happened since that, you know, just as Hillary said, it takes a village. But the point is, there are things that have happened that have caused some of the decline. But the point is, you can do it if you have new bodies and new ideas and thoughts. Let the people have those things. You can discuss it with them. You can debate it with them. But don't just say no because we've never done it that way.
Keep up with 20 minutes, dear.
And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Alphabet Cards, the CCB office has them.
And they'll send you as many as you want.
Alphabet Cards are Braille alphabet cards. They have the Braille and the print alphabet, and they're wonderful. You know, a lot of places, including where I work at the Junior Blind here, they pass out these vision things. They're cards. They show what people see with different types of vision, whether it's macular degeneration, glaucoma, RP. You know what? I think it's great, but people look at blindness with synonymous to Braille. They don't necessarily. I mean, if you give a sighted person something like that, they'll play with it for a second. They'll throw it away. If you give them an alphabet card, it's really enticing, especially if they have children who are learning some of that stuff in school.
Very good speakers.
Are there any more volunteers? Volunteers, go to your local. Yeah, I mentioned before. Go to your local Lions, Kiwanis, or Rotary Club.
The Lions, roar.
Yes.
Going back to what if you're fundraising, you keep an like a running tally of all your activities that you do in your desert, you can look back at that at the various activities. Now, this fundraiser made it at $1,500, but this fundraiser made it at $1,000. And you can learn from that and learn the kind of fundraisers that are working for your family.
Absolutely, and also if you keep a track of what you're purchasing each year, if you're going to have the same fundraiser, you already know exactly what you have to get. Yes.
He's up at 20.
I'm sorry, what kind of items? For raffle prizes and stuff? Oh, we've gotten donations from, I was going to say the term record stores. I guess I don't know what they're called today. But
music stores. He's old, you guys.
As far as I'm concerned, CDs are still round. They're like a record. anyway, we've gotten donations from record stores. You can get a lot of restaurant donations. You know, the restaurants are always happy to give you a gift certificate for two people to go to dinner because that's good advertising for them. You can always go, and actually we've gotten two tickets before a couple of times from Disneyland.
Yeah, which we've
passed. I got a whole package once. It was almost $100 worth of stuff from Starbucks. Now, they don't do it every year, you guys. So, but down here, we didn't do it this year, but for the last 8 years, I've been getting 300 rolls or something donated from King's Hawaiian Bakery. As I say, Dinah's here, gave us the 300 pieces of fried chicken. Well, those weren't the prizes, and the rolls weren't. But in essence, though, I'm just saying what you can get. You can get tickets to movie theaters. You can get tickets to things like, you know, down here we have the Laugh Factory. They had sent tickets in the past.
Maybe manicure, pedicure.
Manicures, haircuts, whatever it is. people are willing to get maybe your nails done, you know, pedicure, manicure. We even had one, I remember it was a year or two ago, it was a massage or something like that. But
yeah.
But the point is, ask and you shall receive.
Yes.
If you don't ask, you won't even have a chance to receive.
Are there any more questions for Mr. Metz?
That's good.
Thank you. Call the wild thing. Dan Kaiser, come on up.
Due to technical difficulties, most of Mr. Kaiser's presentation was unable to be recorded.
Y'all know my contact information. I will be, now, the things that the delegates should know, the president should tell their delegates about the CCD legislative stuff, is I do present the state report every convention at one of the general sessions. This year, I'm going to be presenting the federal legislation on Friday evening, the state legislation on Saturday afternoon, the governmental affairs at 4:30, I think, on Saturday, and that's it. This is Dan. Everybody calls me Ken. I don't even look like Ken.
Oh, no.
We look like we don't know the
fight. Okay.
But he's much thinner.
Well, anyway.
Shut up.
My question. My question is, you know, we've all heard a lot in contacting our legislators about various issues. What is the best way? You know, is it a handwritten note? Is it a letter? Is it an email? Is it a phone call? From your current experience of people contacting your legislators, not by showing up.
Make a contact. She's asking me what is the best way.
Yeah, I want to know that question too.
That's
my question.
Contact your legislator. Is it by email? Is it by mail? You know what I would do is I would contact them through your local office, and it depends on the issue. If it's a state bill, you want to contact the person in the state office at the Capitol that's handling the bill. However, if you have an issue in your area, let's say Caltrans isn't putting APS, accessible.
Keep on talking. This is what I want to know.
On the local
San Gabriel
highway that you thought was a street all this time, and lo and behold, it's Caltrans.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're not getting anywhere with that.
Okay.
That would be a good idea to contact a local legislator in your area because it's a state street.
Yeah.
And tell them what the problem is, and you know, then they'll bring it up to the legislator. The legislator will hear about it. But it's very, you know, and if you want to, let's say, invite a legislator to your chapter or to speak, the best way to do that is contact the scheduler.
Yeah.
Now, some folks actually know the legislator and know the assistants of that legislator. And they would call that person, hi, I'm Jane. And you know, and, oh, Jane, hey, well, you need anything, I'll give you anything. And then you can talk. They'll schedule they'll know that they're good friends with the legislator, and you know that's your big inroad. But not everybody has that ability, including myself. And so you know, I'm stuck most of the time contacting schedulers to actually meet with legislators, and they're the best person. And they're usually out of the state office as well, the Capitol office. Very rarely do you have schedulers that are actually in the districts. Sonoma area, Santa Rosa area, that senator is, they have their scheduler there, but that's unusual. Any other questions? Yeah, go ahead. Thank you. You guys pay my salary, sir.
That's
it. Me. I'll get back to you, and you guys pay me, sir.
Come on. It's mine. Ironic. I told you.
And, I think this is a really... I would like to see more of these. You know, I talk to chapters, and I've been chapter president 3 times. I've been secretary a bunch of times. I've been treasurer for Doug. I think I was the world's
first
treasurer.
I have a question for him, too.
The lady from GDY got ready to kill me when I got out of this, so that was
yeah, but I said that for you.
so But I think that, you know, we really do, when we want to get out the word, we rely on the presidents. We rely on the fact that the president's going to put together a legislative committee. We hope that you guys put together community affairs. And, you know, if you need any help, you guys know how to get
Dan, I have me. Dan, I have a question.
Yes, Pat.
How do you get... Okay, I gotta be nice now, huh? How do you get some of your chapter members to be involved, to want to know what's going on? How do you do that?
Well,
I mean, Andy does a very good legislative report every month.
Well, you also bring up local issues. I mean, everything starts locally. You
know, okay.
You people interested, you
their favorite
question
is access.
What's
and
going
they
on
go
locally? You know, what's happening with access, and what's happening with the with your bus system? What's going on with these, you know, stop announce issues in your area? What are some of the issues that affect your average blind person in the chapter? You know, and then you can branch out from that. You know,
we try that. That doesn't work.
I've always been amazed what the apathy that's out there. You know, you're talking about cost of living adjustment freezes. Uh-oh. People weren't up in arms about that. Uh-huh. 5-10 years ago, when they were going to cut SSI, I was the only one at the Capitol. You know, I begged to get people to go with me to the Capitol.
Yeah.
What is going on here? What's going on is that, you know, people
they're complacent.
Are becoming complacent.
Complacent.
And they think we're going to solve their problems for them. But it's up to you to say, you know, you got to be sort of like the public radio announcement going, you're going to lose this station if you don't get off your butt. And that's really what it is. And when we're losing, you know, we stand to lose a lot because, you know, we've, CCD, as you heard Mitch talk about the history of the disability movement, we started it. We gave them all the tools to take a lot of our benefits and a lot of what we gained away from us. So somehow we have to keep, what I like to say, and this is an editorial comment, but I really think it's, I like to keep the blind, aged, and disabled all independent of each other. We work together collaboratively when we can on things that we agree with, but when it comes to
our blindness,
we are blind, and we fought for what we've got, and we've got to maintain it. And it's up to the local chapters to do that. It sounds weird, but if the local chapters aren't motivated, then the whole thing falls apart. And now that I've cheered everybody up, thank you. Okay.
This is a great group of the really informative, well organized life.
Thank you.
Someone didn't know what he said.
Oh, okay. John said that he thought it was very informative and organized, and we should do something along these lines on a yearly basis.
Anyone else have anything to say, or maybe any questions that they wanted to ask that they weren't able to ask? And I know Pam wanted to make a comment as well. She's singing and coming up here, so let me give it to Pam while you're thinking of your question.
What I wanted to say was first, thank you for everybody for participating. Donna and Linda really worked hard on pulling this together, and I have had a real good time with the time clock.
I knew you would.
Yeah. And I also wanted to say, this is, as a lot of you know, I've only been blind a few years, 6 years, as a matter of fact. Seven? Is it seven now? Well, it is seven now. I lost track. And I have to say, I have been busier with the CCB than I have ever been in my life. And I have raised 3 kids and worked full time. Being president of LA and vice president of Long Beach has been quite an experience. But with the help of Andy, who is very good at his legislative report, he might drive me crazy when it comes to restaurants, but his reports are very well done. My husband has a tendency of wanting to whisper in my ear all the time on how to run the meeting, but he does a good job, too. I pretty much ignore him. I'm going to run it my way. I have learned that I do have the ability to lead a group of people. And with this group, with this meeting that we had today, with this all this information, I'm going to take it back and apply it to some of the problems that I see in our chapter. So I thank you.
Just some thoughts that I had as the morning progressed. I think our responsibility is to lead, and we hope that this seminar provided lots of suggestions and ideas about how to manifest that leadership in your chapters. I think our responsibility is to assess the resources within our chapters, yes, and to invite our chapter members to participate, yes, more, yes, fully on a regular, yes, basis.
Yes.
And but to gather ideas from them, but to set the direction and the tone that our chapters will take. And we hope that you've taken some good ideas away on that, and you will all receive,
yes,
the format that you asked for in the mail.
You will,
please,
we promise.
Feel free to share them with other members of your chapters and report on this meeting tonight.
Because Maria,
and one of the things that I also hope that everybody here leaves with is that everything that came, you know, from today, you know, again, every chapter has its own personality. And as Linda said, assess the resources that are in your chapter. You know, not everybody does things the same way. You know, different things work for different people, and I think our chapters are all a reflection of what CCB is, which is a democracy that doesn't believe in one size fits all, and you do it this way and only this way. Every chapter has its character. And you know, I've learned a great deal from everybody here and everybody that I've worked with, and us having the chapter the size that ours is, it can become, and I learned this from somebody that I'm working with just recently, but every once in a while it can become a big hairy meatball. It really can. But well, it can. And that's why, and that's the key of having a core team of officers, because we guide. But all the ideas, all the motivation, nothing will get done unless it's a team effort from every one of the members. And we need to figure out ways to gently encourage people to do different things, you know, depending on what it is that needs to be done, whether it be breaking your chapter up into committees sometimes that work outside of the meetings. Find out what folks like. Get them where they live, you know, and bring them in that way. But again, every chapter has its own character, has its, you know, own personality, and I hope that you take, you know, the pieces that fit best for you from this seminar and take them back and share them with your chapters and make it yours, because it is. It is very much so. And thank you to everybody. All our committee members, this could not have been done without all of you. Thank you. And thank you to everybody who attended today, because this would not have happened if it wasn't for you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
We really